Welcome to the Month End, a CPG community chat. The Month End will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational world. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry, which all have vast experiences and insights that will be shared with the audience. All right, welcome to episode 4 of the Month End. Today I'm really excited about kind of promoting a client that we've had for a long time, and actually a client that does in-house manufacturing. So it'll be our first interviewee who does that versus just leveraging kind of co-packing relationships. So Kyle Kohler from Wild Way. How are you doing today, Kyle?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing great. So Wild Way, kind of granola-based company based in San Antonio, Texas. Can you give us a little bit of a background of the business, kind of, you know, what you sell and kind of just a high level of what you do and how you operate?
For sure. Yeah, we've been in business for 7 years now. We do a paleo-style granola. We do a hot cereal. We've ventured into kind of a trail mix and snack mix types items, all made with nuts and seeds and dried fruit. We do all our manufacturing here in San Antonio. So we've been doing that from the get-go. That's fun. So yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, we'll definitely touch base on that. That's of high interest kind of on a lot of other kind of prospective clients or CPG brands in terms of how you made that happen. So kind of while we start, how about we just start kind of with where do you sell? Your sales channels you're in, kind of, you know, give me just kind of is there one that you enjoy or don't enjoy? And just kind of, we'll start off from there, please.
Yeah, we're pretty equally distributed evenly between e-commerce, traditional retail, natural and specialty grocery, and then a little bit of food service as well. So we're about evenly split between those three different channels. The one that I enjoy the most, e-commerce probably, and food service. Mainly because it takes out a lot of the distribution problems and the middlemen from those two accounts. Those probably the ones I enjoy the most.
How do you, clearly you got distributors within the natural food space and how you deal with that. Clearly, if you look at kind of how deductions are handled within those, you know, entities, the Unifies, the KEs of the world, from your perspective of growing this business for the last 7 years and the growth that you guys have had, do you feel it's required to go into distribution, or do you see kind of an opportunity for some clients to kind of just go direct to e-com, you know, leveraging kind of their website and or, Amazon along the way?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like retail will always be there, and there it's always important to have a presence in retail, but I don't necessarily think that distribution is necessarily should be the first or the only way. Obviously, I think that there's a lot of other avenues to reach customers, both from an e-commerce perspective and different food service channels, different grocery outlet channels. So I definitely don't think distribution is the end all be all that it was, say, even 5 years ago. I think it's definitely one channel that obviously should be considered. But as far as the optimal channel, I think it's dependent on the company and your business model. And I think it's a lot dependent too on how you produce and the amount of cash that you have to be able to handle distribution as well, because it can be relatively expensive.
Definitely. How have you, how do you kind of assess the success of each sales channel? So how do you consider the profitability, or how do you kind of manage specific kind of metrics within each one of those channels? And I guess, do you at the end of the day, you know, typically, you know, we report by sales channel for you from a profitability standpoint, but kind of how do you look at each one of those? Because they're each kind of their own little strategy of how to operate within them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you said it really well. Profitability is a big part of it. So understanding the profitability of each sales channel, understanding what drives that profitability as well, is incredibly important. Obviously, the things that drive profitability in e-commerce are going to be different than the things that drive profitability through distribution, and it'll be completely different from what drives profitability in food service. So profitability, obviously understanding those different metrics that drive it are huge. And obviously with distribution, in-store promotions and all the nick, you know, ins and outs of distribution spend, the nickel and diming of distribution can have a huge impact on profitability. And so understanding that and taking those things into account, when you start getting into distribution pretty heavily, is incredibly important, but also understanding that you're going to deal with a lot of similar expenses on the e-commerce side, as far as advertising is concerned, You know, it's not as simple as just putting up a website and crossing your fingers, right? So, and what a lot of people don't realize is they want to jump into e-commerce because, you know, the margins are higher there, but at the end of the day, a lot of times the margins in e-commerce might be your lowest margins because the spend that you have to spend on advertising, in order to get noticed, in order to get those sales. So, you know, it's things that a lot of people don't think about when they want to jump into D2C or jump into e-commerce. Hey, I'm going to make so much more money doing it this way. And at the end of the day, they realize the amount of money they have to spend to get those sales can sometimes outweigh the benefits of the additional margin. So it's understanding the drivers of profit in each one of those sales channels. And a big one for us is just to diversify as well. We've been really big on diversifying in each one of those sales channels. And right now we're pretty evenly split in our sales from e-commerce to traditional grocery to food service. And I think that's incredibly important just because each one is going to fluctuate, have its ups and downs, especially this year, given what happened this year, the pandemic and the ups and downs that it created. And I think we wouldn't have come out of it nearly as well as we did if we had been so heavily weighted in one of those three channels versus split.
Yeah, definitely. No, we've, with our array of kind of clients, some of them were in e-com that decided, I need to get in there right away because that's what's going to be the lifeblood of kind of sales the next kind of, you know, several months, and who knows how long this is going to exist. So yeah, you know, one kind of question is, you know, from an Amazon perspective, so clearly, yeah, I guess to step back, you know, to respond to your commentary, you know, one of the things that I've seen CPG brands not look at is the advertising spend, right? They factor in like, oh, my margins are high up there. And, you know, but after you factor in what you sell on your website, whether it's Shopify or WooCommerce or whatever, like what you discount to clients, right? So you're discounting your customers of that. You got to factor that in as well as then, oh, I'm spending $100,000 on advertising to drive $200,000 of revenue. So you need to kind of always factor in the advertising, you know, function along the way in that spend. Additionally, with Amazon, you know, clearly, you know, with Amazon kind of FBA and the fees of, you know, leveraging their website, just the sales fees plus the inbound inventory, things like that, you guys fulfill on your own, right?
We do. Yeah, we do.
Okay, so have you always done that, fulfilled on your own? And if not, like, when did you decide to do that, and how has that gone?
Yeah, no, we've always fulfilled our own through the Amazon channel. I mean, we're kind of lucky enough to start selling on Amazon, gosh, I'd say pretty early on, maybe a year, not even a year into our business. We decided, hey, let's try to sell something on Amazon. And this was when, you know, you really couldn't find a whole lot of food on the platform. And so I think we got really lucky to start so early because we were grandfathered into a lot of, I think, policies that people don't get privy to now if they just start and open up a seller account now. And so we were fortunate enough to start really early and have always fulfilled early. Always fulfilled our own products from the beginning. And it's just the control, being able to have that control and making sure that we're not out of stock. So Amazon has algorithms that really, really hurt you if you have products that are out of stock or if you don't get products from customers. They're so customer-centric. You've got to deliver on time. You've got to deliver your product to Amazon's warehouses on time so they can deliver to the customer on time. And you really get hurt both in search rank and as a rank as a seller. If you don't deliver on time. So being able to have that control has been really important for us because I know that it's a metric that's really important to Amazon and it really helps. So.
Interesting. From a fulfillment standpoint, since we're talking about that, is there any, like, you know, what are some positives? Clearly there's a positives of fulfillment, control, cost, things like that, but there's also negatives that upfront cost processes. Has there been any specific negatives or kind of, you know, learnings you can share with people or, you know, experiences that you guys have learned from?
For sure. I mean, I think the big one for us, not necessarily on the Amazon side, but from our own direct-to-consumer business, I think the biggest thing that we've learned is, I mean, and it goes hand in hand with Amazon. I mean, we call it the Amazon effect. Right? Everybody expects product to ship in 2 days and they expect it to ship for free and they expect to get it there quick. And so, you know, we can't compete with the amount of money that Amazon loses on shipping every year. Like we'll go out of business, right? Yeah. But our customers still expect that. They still expect product to be shipped out that day. They expect it to get there quick and they want it for free. And so having to compete with that has been really difficult. I mean, we've set a threshold, you know, for instance, on our direct to consumer business, if you buy $25, you get free shipping. You know, we run a lot of promotions on our direct to consumer business as well, which really brings down the profitability of that. But you know, it's what consumers expect, unfortunately. It's really hard to compete with that, and it's really hard to convince customers that we are not Amazon. We're a lot smaller than that, and so we try hard to at the end of the day, we're never going to be able to compete with them and offer free shipping across the board or offer guaranteed two-day shipping. But at the same time, we have to be cognizant of that. And so we try to get orders out. Any orders that are placed, I would say before 1 p.m., we try to get them out that same day. Just knowing that that is going to make us such a big difference to the customer to get that order confirmation that same day as if they would when they were purchasing straight from Amazon. Yeah. So.
And you're selling on Shopify, right?
Correct. Yeah.
That's so then are you guys just leveraging Shopify to ShipStation and having that workflow from your yep. fulfillment process?
Yep. Yep.
Gotcha. And do you have like a dedicated fulfillment team or is it kind of a mix of co-packing fulfillment, your warehouse personnel?
It's kind of a mix of fulfillment and warehouse personnel that do the fulfillment. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Great. Great to know. So that's on the fulfillment side. Again, you know, many of our, many CPG brands are leveraging clearly 3PLs or Amazon, you know, to manage all the fulfillment side of it. So it's always an interesting kind of cost benefit scenario. Clearly having control makes sense, but you know, the numbers still need to add up and make sense from your perspective. Now moving to the co-packing side, the manufacturing side, you know, where you're handling that in-house. Again, you always have done that from the start, manufacturing?
Yep. Yep, we've always done it from the beginning. Yeah.
So how did you make that decision? How did you make that work? Clearly, there had to be equipment you had to buy because, you know, a lot of, you know, like we always kind of tell people or, you know, my recommendation to a lot of people is keep it simple, right? And start fresh and leverage kind of experts in different aspects of the business. So then you can focus on brand development, core operations, growth until you kind of get it, you know, refined and then you can kind of grow and tweak or add in specific in-house functions. But how did you make that decision up front? And then how did you make it work to get the capital for the equipment and everything that you needed to do to make the granola?
Yeah, absolutely. We've always done, like I said, keeping it simple has always been our model from the beginning. And so we've always just started out with getting the least amount of equipment and things possible until we were just busting at the seams and couldn't do it anymore. And then grow a little bit from there and a little bit from there and a little bit from there. It was never our intention from the beginning to do everything in-house. It just kind of happened that way when we were really, really small and probably just selling in, I would say maybe 100, 200 stores maybe, and we were super small. We got approached to co-pack a private label product for a large private label customer, and their main requirement was that we couldn't outsource the manufacturing. We had to do it in-house. And this was going to add, I mean, this was going to maybe, I don't know, 8 to 10x our revenue at the time, just making this one product for this one customer. So without really having any idea how we were going to do it, or having the money to do it or the equipment to do it, we just said yes and said, we'll figure it out later.
Typical entrepreneur, right? Oh, like, yeah, then we'll figure it out. Yeah.
Like, yeah, we'll do it. No problem. You can do it. It's easy. Yeah, we'll figure it out. So as that kind of deadline approached, to getting those first purchase orders, it was basically like 9 months of just freaking out, figuring out like, how the hell are we going to do this with three employees and like one little tiny, filler machine. So scrambled around, you know, got some equipment, you know, basically got customers and raw material suppliers to say, hey, you know, here's the manufacturer that we're producing for. They're reputable. You know, can you give us better terms and our ingredients? Convinced them that, you know, once we got POs, if we send them the POs, they'd give us better terms. So just kind of leveraged that relationship and those POs to get better terms on ingredients as well. And then ended up expanding, gosh, in two totally new warehouses at the time. In a matter of about 9 months to be able to do this business. We moved into a warehouse here that didn't have any air conditioning. We're in San Antonio and that was July. So it was about 110 in the warehouse. So we had to insulate it and AC it and do all these crazy things. And eventually made it work and it worked out. And we ended up producing for that customer for, I'd say, almost 2 years. So it was a really good account for us and it really helped us grow and mature as a company. But the result of that was now we're really neck deep in doing it ourselves and aren't going back from there. And so it was kind of happenstance that happened, but it really, you know, it was just luck, you know, luck's part of it. It really is. You know, that account was strictly luck and sometimes that's going to happen. And we were fortunate enough to do that. And then the side effect of that was is that we're manufacturing in-house, but at the same time, had all that control, we're able to reduce our margins elsewhere on our other accounts because we started buying things at a lot more volume, started producing things a lot more efficiently, and then really just kind of went from there. Again, one piece of equipment at a time, you know, one employee at a time, you know, did what we could do, really keeping in mind profitability and margin along the way so we could grow sustainably.
Did you have to leverage any kind of bank relationships, factor relationships at that time to purchase that equipment? Is there any kind of, if you did, is there any kind of best practices or kind of, you know, recommendations for kind of, you know, the CPG community out there of
yeah,
but on that route?
Yeah. I mean, at the time there was a company out of Austin called Able Lending, and they aren't around anymore, but they had a very interesting lending model to where they would lend you money, but part of it, a percentage of it, had to be backed by friends and family. So they would lend you a certain amount of money as long as, say, 30% of it was also backed by friends and family. So it was kind of an interesting lending model to where we didn't necessarily qualify for traditional bank financing at the time, obviously. And so we were able to kind of utilize friends and family relationships to say, hey, we need a $50,000 loan. Can we try to get $10,000 or $15,000 from friends and family to put up? And then they'll actually get interest on that money while the bank gets interest on, while Able got interest on the rest. And we use that relationship to grow into our first few accounts. So we were very fortunate enough to find them and have them on our side. But yeah, I mean, when you're young, when you're small and don't really have the finances or the history to really get traditional lending or traditional banking, a lot of it's really about relationships at that point in time. And really making solid relationships with people, and really having a good line of sight. If you're not profitable, which is really hard to do as a young company, at least having a line of sight to it, and making that known to your bankers were incredibly important. At least knowing, you know, hey, with this money, we'll be able to buy this and utilize this in order to become profitable, you know, very, very quickly. That's what they want to see. And so when we were young, it was very difficult. As we grew, we're still bootstrapped now. We don't have any institutional investors in our company, so we're still bootstrapped. So we still have a lot of that control. But the opposite side of that is that the growth is a little slower. Yeah. But there's different KPIs and different metrics that we keep track of that we wouldn't necessarily be so concerned about keeping track of if we were investor or venture backed. But so just a different model. But again, as you're young, the relationships, I think, are incredibly important to build those early on.
Yeah. So you leveraged kind of that, situation with that lending company. And yeah. I'm assuming you kept touch with local banks or banks in the area. And then after a specific time, you were able to create relationships with them and get a lending relationship. Is that correct?
Yep. So again, very early on, we created relationships with different banks. And so when we would go back to them year after year, we'd say, hey, you know, we might not still be lendable yet, but here, look at our sales. Look at where we're at. Look at where we're growing. You know, did the same the next year, the same the next year, the same the next year. So by the time, you know, the fourth or fifth or sixth year of our business rolled around, you know, we'd go back to those bankers and they're saying, hey, you know, yeah, you weren't really lendable, but like, man, you keep coming back to me and your sales keep increasing. That's a good sign, you know? And so, you know, yeah, we'll help you out. We'll give you some debt financing because, you know, I know you're good for it. You obviously have a really good track record. And so for us, you know, we knew once we kind of got to the point to where we knew we weren't really going to take on any venture funding or investor funding, and we knew that debt financing was what we wanted to do to grow. It just became a different business for us, right? Profitability became a much bigger focus. Liquidity became a much bigger focus. A lot of those ratios became a much bigger focus for us in order to become bankable, because we knew that that's what the banks were going to look at.
Right? Yep.
You know, they're not necessarily concerned with top line sales at the expense of being unprofitable every single month.
Right.
You know, that's not necessarily what they're going to want. They're going to want to know that you can pay them back. That was a big focus for us for years and years and years. And we kind of milked that. And then went to a bank and said, look, here's our history of being able to pay people back and history of profitability. And that helped tremendously in those relationships and being able to acquire debt to grow.
Yeah, it's never too early to start a relationship with the bank. Local bank, regional bank is always kind of the best to start with at that level, because they get that face-to-face interaction, show them your improvements every year, show them your wins, show them your losses, and kind of explain, you know, how they can help you kind of grow. But do understand, if it's a debt financing situation, they care about getting paid back. They don't care about you scaling 15x at yeah. the at the stress of cash, not, you know, paying right. their loans. So it's an interesting kind of perspective when you have kind of, you know, VC funds or institutional investors, like they want the huge buyout, right? They don't want that kind of just that cash payback. So just understanding that relationship and what they look for and try to tweak your strategy at that point to that and then it allows you to kind of move forward. So very interesting there. So I want to kind of move back to, you know, this whole kind of inventory management, in-house manufacturing, fulfillment process. So you use Deere Inventory as your kind of inventory management solution. How do you handle understanding when you have to purchase inventory, right? So you're purchasing a ton of raw materials, right, directly. They all get shipped to your facility. Mm-hmm. How do you manage kind of that, the reordering of it? You know, how does cash flow factor into it? Kind of just walk through your process of managing inventory, reordering inventory, and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's really simple. I mean, we don't have really complicated processes or systems in place. It's really just, we have our production team do an inventory check weekly. We work to keep about 2 weeks worth of raw materials and goods on hand. So not to have too much cash tied up in raw materials, but enough to where, you know, if there was a hiccup in the supply chain, we'd have enough to fulfill customer needs for a few weeks. And so we try to manage both sides of it, right? We want to be able to prepare for the worst case scenario, but at the same time, cash is always king, and the bank doesn't care if I have $10,000 in walnuts sitting in my warehouse. You know, they want that $10,000 in my bank account. So just again, being able to leverage kind of both sides of those and know that yes, cash is important, but at the same time, you know, we need to be cautious that we need to fulfill, you know, make our customers happy as well and fulfill all those orders. And so it's really not a complicated process. We just, you know, we don't deal with a ton of ingredients. We have backup suppliers for just about everything, you know, in case something goes awry. Some ingredients we import direct ourselves. And we're really not purchasing a ton of volume of some ingredients, but we've been able to shave off a lot of margin points by working direct with manufacturers, direct with growers for certain ingredients, and that's really helped a lot. Getting those direct relationships with a walnut grower, with a date grower, and establishing those direct relationships even when you're small. Because it's those supplier relations are just like bank relations, right? You might go to them and say, hey, you know, I need a pallet today, or hey, can you do half a pallet for me? And they're gonna say, oh yeah, you know, yes, I'm sure I can. But then the next time you come around, you need two pallets, and the next time it's four, and then the next time you come to them, you're asking about truckload pricing. You know, same as a bank, they're gonna be like, man, you've really grown, this is great, and you've established a really good relationship with a really reputable supplier that you know is gonna give you quality product. That's really gonna shave a lot of margin points. Are really going to help you build that margin to where you need to be by cutting out some of the importers and some of the warehousing suppliers that most people work with. So we work with a little bit of both, and it kind of gets to be a little bit of a mess. But again, diversity has been huge for us on the inventory side as well, having multiple suppliers and multiple backups that we can go to, and just ensuring that we're really keeping that balance between not having too much cash up in inventory, but at the same time keeping enough on hand where we can fulfill our next 2 or 3 week obligations to our customers.
Are you manufacturing every day?
We produce 4 days a week.
4 days a week, gotcha. So, okay. Yeah. Cool. And how many team members, how many warehouse personnel, kind of come back and fulfillment personnel do you have?
We've only got about a dozen.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Dozen. Interesting. How did COVID impact production facility down in Texas?
It didn't impact us a ton. I mean, it impacted us a little bit at the beginning. You know, we unfortunately had to downsize a little bit when that happened. I think the biggest impact that we had was probably on the, on the equipment side. I know we talked about this a little bit, earlier, I think last month, but we had just brought in a new, like, fully automated packaging line to fully automate everything. For us here, brand new, like stand-up pouch line. It was beautiful. We imported it in, unfortunately imported it in from China around late February. And unfortunately have yet to have been able to bring an engineer over to help set it up and get it working. So we've got, you know, a six-figure piece of packaging machinery that's been sitting in about 30 pieces in our warehouse. That's been sitting there since February. So that's been fun to stomach, I guess, but just bad timing.
Yeah, soon enough, it'll be set up. So with all this, you know, in-house fulfillment, in-house manufacturing has brought up, you know, amongst kind of some really great kind of other service opportunities for you, right? Like selling co-packing as a service, fulfillment as a service. Like, when have you started that? How's that going? You know, kind of what's your thoughts on, you know, even expanding your kind of, again, sales channels to not selling products, but selling services and leveraging that equipment and your processes and your personnel to kind of continue to drive, you know, new forms of revenue.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all about driving new forms of revenue for us. And it's about diversification as well. So, you know, manufacturing in-house has allowed us to private label for other people. It's allowed us to co-pack products for other people, which we do. We do fulfillment as a service for other people as well. So we fulfill other direct to consumer businesses, goods from our warehouse. We fulfill other companies, Amazon orders from our warehouse. And all of that brings in extra streams of revenue. And all of that is a way for us to diversify as well. So we have the space, we have the personnel. And so one of the things that we kind of pivoted to a little bit when COVID hit is said, hey, the manufacturing side is a little slow right now. And there's, you know, because of the downturn in our food service business, it's a little slow. So where else can we bring in additional revenue from other places? Well, e-commerce is exploding. We knew people that weren't happy with their 3PL. They were just getting swallowed up by fees and late shipments. And so we reached out to them and said, hey, you know, we do it ourselves. I ship everything out same day. Let us do it for you. I'll charge you less than your 3PL. We'll all be happy. And so it's been really great to be able just to kind of tap into those different services and be able to utilize those and pivot in that direction. And again, it just adds extra diversity to our business, other channels of income, other streams of income that really at the end of the day don't really take a whole lot of time or energy off our plate. We're already doing those things for ourselves. We already have the knowledge and the capabilities and the equipment. And so for us, it just adds extra streams of revenue and keeps us going and provides extra money for us that wouldn't be there otherwise. So, yeah.
Yeah, leveraging your resources. You know, I always love the hustle of the entrepreneur of, you know, when something like this hits, like, where else can we find money? What else do we have? We're already paying people. We're already paying rent. We're already paying, you know, equipment. Like, how can we leverage that for other people? You guys are gluten-free. Is that right?
We are, yeah.
So then you're certified gluten-free or your warehouses, so you guys can even support those kind of brand companies as well, then, right?
Yep, absolutely. Gotcha.
Which is great. Cool. What do you do on a day-to-day basis, by the way? Sounds like everything.
I just put out fires all the time. It seems like I'm just like the problem solver. Just a lot of managing at this point, a lot of putting out fires, a lot of problem solving, research and development stuff as well. And just big picture, where are we going? What are the next steps?
Awesome. Well, clearly you have a lot going on at this time. You know, it's really exciting of where Wild Away came from when we created a relationship, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, and now where you're at now. About ready to wrap up the interview, kind of like I like ending, you know, with kind of one do and one don't, you know, recommendations from, you know, experienced personnel here. So why don't you go ahead, Kyle, with kind of one do that you'd, you know, provide to an emerging CPG brand.
For sure. I think I've said this a few times already, but my one do would be to diversify. I think it's been incredibly important for us. I mean, I come from a finance and accounting background, so I think of our business just like I would think of somebody's like financial portfolio, right? You have to diversify all those assets, you know, because when some, you know, just to leverage, you know, the bad from the good, right? And I think that we've diversified really well in our sales channels, being diversified from in traditional grocery and e-commerce and food service. If we were so heavily weighted in food service, you know, and didn't sell any e-commerce, I don't know if we'd be in business now from COVID, right? And we know companies that were in that boat, right? They had all of their business kind of in one or two different buckets, and it really hurt the business. So we look at it from a sales perspective, diversifying from a revenue perspective and all the other streams of revenue that we bring in, from an ingredients perspective and diversifying our suppliers and our supply chain. And across the board, I think it's incredibly important and things that, you know, something that a lot of people don't really take into account, right? If you're at one co-packer and they do all of your business and that co-packer goes under or has a problem, that's all of your business, right? If you use one supplier for every ingredient and something happens with that supplier, there goes all of your business. And so that's been a huge focus for us since the beginning is every different aspect of our business, where can we diversify it to help reduce risk? Reduce risk because we bootstrapped from the beginning, so we don't have the cash to absorb a large mistake, right? You know, if we did co-pack, you know, a big co-packing mistake, or if we used one supplier, that supplier went under or had a recall, you know, we don't have all the cash necessary to support that. And so being diversified has really helped us get through some tough times and some really lean times because of that. And so that's my big one do for a lot of companies, especially if you're going to stay lean, make sure that you're diversified in really every sense of sales, revenue, supply chain, across the board.
And I think that's a great recommendation. Clearly with kind of seeing how COVID has impacted, you know, day-to-day life really kind of, I think, opens people's eyes of like, hey, if we were just in this one space, we'd be screwed. But if we were in five, then we still have four going versus one or whatever. So that's great. Great info there. And then I guess the last thing is like, what's one don't?
One don't. I think the biggest, one of the biggest lessons for us, not, this isn't necessarily from a finance and operations perspective, but just to not shortchange your happiness when it comes to growth and running your company. I think there's a lot of, especially in this business, there's a lot of people that like to tell you how you should run your business and how it should be done. And hey, you should have this margin, you should sell to this retailer, and you should raise this amount of money, and you should do this, go this way and do this route. And we did that for the longest time, right? We tried to run our business like everybody else, you know, told us we should be running our business, right? Oh, you shouldn't be profitable. You should sell to this company, you know, and do all these different things. And it really made us miserable in the long run. I think the day that we sat down and said, hey, we're going to run a business like we want to run it, I'm going to produce the products that I want to produce, and make the amount of money I want to make, and not deal with this, you know, not deal with this supplier if they're not going to work with me, not deal with this distributor if they're not going to make it a win-win relationship, and just run a business like we wanted to run it. And we're so much happier, right? I mean, the growth is a little different. The growth is a little slower. We're not growing, you know, gangbusters, you know, 10x every single year, and just, you know, blowing out into, you know, you can't find our products in 30,000 retailers, right? But we're really happy doing what we do. And I think that that's something that a lot of people kind of push to the side, especially early on in their business when they're so sales focused and so growth focused. You can, in the end of the day, you can run $100 million company, but be absolutely miserable doing it. And it took us far too long to kind of realize that this was our business and we wanted to run it how we wanted to run it. And it made us a lot happier. So.
No, I think that's great. Another great recommendation as an entrepreneur myself and running, you know, account flip for the last, I don't know, 8-9 years, you know, similar time frame as you, it's, you understand and you have to make kind of pivots and decisions and understand like, hey, like if I keep doing this, I'm burning out, or kind of what was the whole reason I did this was for flexibility. Well, what does that mean versus, you know, is 100 hours a week really flexible, or is it flexible because you can kind of, you know, work your life or change your kind of hours kind of abnormally or move along, right? So, but I think that was all great information. I really enjoyed the conversation, Kyle. I think this is really, really great information for people related to, especially the kind of understanding kind of the in-house kind of decisions or how you made it happen and things like that, because I think it's a huge opportunity for people if they can make it work. Clearly there's risk on both sides of the puzzle, but that's why the founders of the specific CPG brands or, you know, the brands out there can make those decisions. That's why, you know, they're doing it and then they can figure it out. I think at the end of the day, what I've heard from you is, you know, every scenario or situation that's come to the, you know, table for you, and your team, like you identified how to take advantage of that, right? And look at it as an opportunity versus a negative and figure out like, okay, this is where it's at. We got to move forward and figure out how to make it happen. And then at that point, that's when the kind of, you know, you separate the good entrepreneurs from the bad entrepreneurs, I believe. Like you have to figure out, problem solve, you know, work hard, make connections, network, shake hands, and just figure it out. So at the end of the day, man, I really appreciate your time. Can you give a little bit of, you know, love for Wild Way? Where can we find Wild Way? Where can we buy it? What should we buy? What's your favorite product?
Gosh, probably the easiest place to buy it across the country is Amazon, I would say. You can find us in HEB here in Texas or Wegmans up in the Northeast and a scattering of Whole Foods stores across the country. Currently, our holiday flavor is our gingerbread flavor. It's probably one of our best sellers. And a portion of the profits go to support the Texas Parks and Wildlife here, helping people get back out into our national parks and Texas parks. Getting back in the outdoors and enjoying that, especially important after the kind of year we've had here. So gingerbread, I would say, is my favorite. And purchase that. Go online, go on Amazon, go on our website and purchase it. Because a portion of the profits go to a good cause and support a good company.
That's awesome, Kyle. Yeah, I've had your granola. It's awesome. So again, thanks again. I hope you all enjoyed the month end podcast here, episode 4 with Kyle Kohler from Wild Way. Go check it out. Go buy their granola, and hopefully you learned some good knowledge and information on this. Thanks again, everybody. Have a good one.